By the early 1970s, the Lebanese-American community in North Carolina reflected a pattern common among immigrants. Many from the second and third generations had scattered across the state to start families and businesses. In doing so, they established networks distant from those that were central to the lives of their parents and grandparents. In 1975, a civil war broke out in Lebanon. It lasted for 15 years and claimed the lives of over 150,000 Lebanese and injured hundreds of thousands more. Compounding this internal conflict were recurring Israeli attacks, culminating in a devastating invasion in 1982 and followed by an 18-year occupation. The violence, instability, and accompanying economic crises made life untenable for many. Over the next decades, more than 1.2 million Lebanese left the country. Unlike the first wave, these Lebanese included as many Muslims as Christians, and more often came as individuals or married couples with university degrees or to pursue higher education in America. Their numbers and more intimate connection to Lebanon revitalized the Lebanese-American community in North Carolina.
We did not realize at that time how devastating it's going to be, of course, at the beginning of the war. And we didn't understand, you know, how long it's going to take. You know, to us as students, it was a day off when it originally started. It was, hey, we've got a day off. But it didn't take long before it became serious. And, you know, we saw it in a different light where some people that were in our class couldn't come anymore.
We had friends, you know, we had fun. We laughed all the time. We were with our sisters and brother, and we had chores just like, you know, you would with your own family. And to comfort us, they would tell us, listen, this, they know, everybody, the Christians and the Muslims know in this orphanage there is Muslim kids and Christian kids, so they're not going to bomb here. They know where we are, so, and I don't know if it was true or not, but it made us feel, you know, a little bit better. And so, and really in the whole orphanage, we'd hear bombs everywhere. We only, the one bomb hit the orphanage, and one kid died, and his brother's leg was amputated, and so it's kind of hard.
The first thing, you know, the first probably bullet that you heard in Lebanon when the war broke was about 2 miles away from our house. It was like an early part of 75. And we were still, you know, literally teenagers. I don't remember much about my neighborhood with the fun time. I mean, my childhood with the fun, good time I had. All I remember is from 75 till 85. Because the time it started on 75, it kind of erased all my memory about the good time I have prior to that. We left the house supposedly for 2 hours, 3 hours. We didn't come back to it till about 8 years later. So that's what I remember, is running away from one village to another, hide here, hide there, get over here. And, you know, that's how bad it was growing up.
We didn't really enjoy to kind of discover our country, you know, at that point. So we were pretty much confined in the village. And then obviously we always went to school. School didn't stop really. So we would go under, you know, sometimes some shelling and whatever was going on. And we just walk fast and go to school. And because the some of the war was not really in where we are and was like in faraway areas, so, but you could hear it and you could tell maybe it's going to come on us.
I think it was third and fourth grade, they condensed these 2 years in one academic year because of the many days we had to miss school. And my mom would sit, we would be sitting in a basement because of all the shelling and it wasn't safe to be upstairs, and she would, I remember, have the English book in her hand, workbook, making me go through her homework. It was like homeschooling while school is closed. So it wasn't an excuse that there's no school, then you don't have to study. No, we had to. My brother, they told them, if you if you don't want to read, then play chess, do something to use your mind, get your mind off what's going on outside, and, you know, educate yourself.
We lived in Harish Tabit. Right facing Harish Tabit was a Palestinian camp called Tal Azata. So before we know it, I was so naive, I didn't know what's going on. Boom, 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 bombarding and bombing. I couldn't go to school. Senior in high school, I couldn't finish high school. And we had the opportunity, you know, to come to United States. We had visas and we went, got a student visa this time to the American Embassy. I remember going through downtown Beirut and the bombing was so bad we had to crawl on our tummy to hide behind a truck or a bus.
My father and his brothers, they had a bakery, they worked all together. But then with the war, he started kind of a special business. He goes to Beirut, because during the war, people, they were not able to go to Beirut. So they would come to him, like with, let's say, if you want a passport, or you want a visa from the embassy, or you want whatever, what kind, or translation, you're traveling, because lots of people, they fled Lebanon, but you need lots of paperwork. So he would take the paperwork and take it from Kharjiyi, Dakhliyi, whatever, and he would prepare your paperwork and for you. So that's, he changed his business from being a baker to that, and he drove the taxi back and forth also to Beirut while on doing this job.
My mother would occasionally visit, but during the war, we got her out. You know, I told you, 73 we went to visit, 75 the war broke out, and so she came out, and we tried to get her to stay here. She came for a couple of years and then says, oh, things are getting better, I'm going back. I say, mother, aren't you watching the same news we're watching? How come we're concluding they're not? She went back in 82, you know, and then the Israeli invasion came up. They bombed Beirut and she ran to a nephew in Antilles and quiet and things like this. And so eventually she realized she had to come out, so we brought her out.
From my parents' standpoint, I think the turning point was when my father and my brother got injured. That was number one, you know, seeing what this is. And now there was resistance to the occupation, and that created, like, every now and then you would see the tanks rolling through the streets.
And they soldiers started actually taking young guys, I mean the prisoners.
So that particular time that they, the Israeli soldiers came to our house, I wasn't in the house. They picked actually the oldest of my brothers, and that was Jihad, he was 16, and sent him to prison.
Like any Lebanese, you're hopeful, tomorrow it will finish, tomorrow it will finish. And it never finished. So finally my parents made the decision that the kids are here studying. My younger brother still was in 10th grade in Lebanon. He was with them. They said, okay. And he was walking one time on the street, got hit a little bit by a scrap from the bullets and the bombing. They made the decision, okay, it's enough, we'll come.
We came here to study and then go back in 3-4 years. I went to grad school, Moise went to grad school. And the war didn't end. I mean, it was unbelievable that it kept going and getting stronger at that point. So we had to choose, you know, we can't go back and no jobs. And our families didn't really want us to come back if we can stay here.
شو بدي أعمل؟ وقع الضرب ما بقى فيني احكي بكيت كثير وتعذبت كثير انقهرت كثير اول ولد راح من البيت وهذا الكبير كثير انقهرت كثير مش نفس انا وبيو بس شو بدنا نعمل صار يكتب لنا وبعث لنا مكاتيب من هونيك صرنا اوقات لما يطول تي يكتب نروح نحكي على التليفون ومش الحال تعودنا شو بدنا نعمل.
It was very, very difficult, especially on my mom. And it is to this day. Every time I talk to her on the phone, 28 years later, she cries on the phone every time we talk. And it's very hard for her to see me so far away. But it was inevitable. I mean, there was no choice but to do what we did. And their hope was that 3 years and 4 years, I'll be back. And as things got worse and worse in Lebanon between 1983 and 1991, it was obvious that and they were convinced that I should not come back. And then as I got into my career and started really in the field of pharmaceutical research, it became obvious to me that going back to Lebanon to have a career there was not a possibility.
You have the school, that was tough. You're on your own. Your sister, youngest sister, who's 16, was kind of, you felt bad, I felt bad for her. And, you know, I'm having a hard time. My brother was having a hard time because he had just gotten here. So, and my two other sisters are, at, you know, in the middle of the war. We don't know whether they're alive or dead. They're, you know, it was really, the lines were so bad at the time. So you have it bad from every angle.
You started from underground, and it was pretty tough. It was really tough. How did I like it? Well, I'll be honest and I'll be sincere. This country, I owe this country more than I owe it any other place in the world. I love it. It's my country. It's I can't say it's my second home now. I say because I've lived here more than I lived in Lebanon. I raised my kids. My kids were born here. I owe it my life. But the first 4 or 5 years in it, just left a few scars.
The very first week, somebody called us terrorists. That's when it was like they were bombing, you know, when they bombed the embassy. So, and I was thinking to myself, like, I'm 18 years old. I've never been, you know, I have never done anything bad, and he's calling me a terrorist. So I felt pretty bad about that. So I kept on thinking, in my... And whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to represent my country well.
When I first got married and moved to the south, when they bombed the military in the airport in Lebanon, I was scared to say I'm Lebanese. Back then, I think like 600 or some soldiers lost their life in the airport in Lebanon. So I felt it then. And then the next shock was 9/11. Right at the time of 9/11, we all did this. Where is this? Lebanese and American flags. We all wore it. We made some for all the community here in Charlotte. And to say, hey, we're not bad people.
We are the only Muslim, the only Arab in this neighborhood. And when we first moved here, you can see there's a question mark on the faces, and which is normal, I think. You know, I don't... So getting to know those people closer and becomes friends and knowing each other and dealing with them on a daily basis, the connection that we've made, I'm so proud of it.
We're passing through this world and all we can hope for is that we leave good vibes behind us, you know. And I think we have, not only me and my family, but I think most immigrants that come to the U.S. leave that. In fact, I personally think America is the best country because of its immigrants, because of being able to melt in the pot and bring your thoughts, bring your beliefs, and be more understanding of other people.
Every coin has two sides, right? The positive side, unfortunately, of the war is you start value the intangible stuff. For example, you spend your life building a castle, and overnight somebody runs you out of the castle, or a bomb comes in and just destroys it, right? And all of a sudden you find yourself a refugee. Thank goodness we were never refugees. But none of the material stuff matters when you see those examples. What matters are the, like Lama said, the stuff that nobody can take away from you.
I just love what the Lebanese culture brings, the warmth that is in between people, the ability to really enjoy yourself in a group environment and have thorough fun and also enjoy different aspects of the culture that are more cosmopolitan, more international than I find in some of my American friends. And I just love that. And so I promised myself from the early days that I will be a bridge between the two.
Born Lebanese, it's in me. It's like your mom and your dad. My mom is Lebanon, my dad is United States. You can't separate the both of them. And it feels like you're from divorced parents. My mom is back there and I'm living here with my dad. You can't, I'm part of both worlds.
You almost feel like you don't belong there in Lebanon, you don't belong here. You never, you're in a nether world or whatever. You know, it seems like you don't, you know, even, you know, at the time I felt that, but I felt maybe I could kind of get used to life here, which I did. But even to this day, you feel like you're not 100% American, you're not 100% Lebanese. If we go there because we like it there, but then you find things that are so irritating, and you know, the chaos and driving and or law or whatever, and so you kind of don't fit there.
أنا زرت أمريكا مش من زمان. كانت أول زيارة لإلي.
والله.
رحت أنا ومرتي على أمريكا. أول رياكشن كانت عند مرتي إنه تعال ليش حتى نرجع لبنان، خلينا نبقى بأمريكا. الناس اللي بيحبوا يكونوا عايشين بنظام بكادر واضح، ما في مشاكل، ما في فوضى، مش كاوتك يعني هذا. بفضلوا مليون مرة يضلوا يبقوا بأمريكا ما يرجعوا لبنان. لما عم بيرجعوا من بلد من برا، طبعا نحكي بس عن أمريكا، لما عم بيرجعوا عم بيلاقوا هالفوضى الموجودة، إن كان من السير أو من التنظيم أو من الدوائر الرسمية اللي أنت بدك تعمل أمورك، هالفوضى اللي موجودة ما عم بتحمس الناس، ما بتخليهم يحسوا إنه they belong، بعد عم بينتموا لهالأرض اللي هن حلموا فيها من وقت ما كانوا بأمريكا لليوم.
Before I was married, I wanted to take them back. And Dad said, son, why do I want to go? I said, Dad, go back. He says, no. He says, I see pictures of what Lebanon is now. It's dual lane highway, big hotels. It's a mountain resort area. He says, I remember Hamana with dirt streets and goats and chickens. That's not my home.
Geography and identity should not be mistaken for each other. You are yourself wherever you are. Now, you might not be in your element, but it's part of your identity wherever you find yourself. The geography then becomes part of your identity then.
الجذور من أصل الجذور اللبنانية من أصل بيخلق لبناني. خلص جذور لبناني، ما في يقول مش لبناني، ما في يتخلى عن جذوره. جذور متأصلة بالأرض، ما في يتخلى عن الجذور. طبعا أكيد العائلة.
We feel as parents that by going back to Lebanon, seeing their relatives, their grandparents, understanding how people live there, what their parents actually were living through when they went to Lebanon, made them much stronger.
Even though we are doing as our duties as parents to teach them the Lebanese culture, but it's so hard when most of their times are spent in school and watching TV and everything. But through the Triangle Lebanese Association, and we opened a school on Saturday to teach Arabic school, and through it they went and actually and learned the dancing and the debke, and they learned all the folkloric dancing. So it nurtured on them the love of the Lebanese culture to reinforce what we do with them here at home.
You've got people that came here in the early 1900s. I mean, they, you know, you hear their grandkids telling you, my grandfather was from Lebanon, but they melted in the pot real good, okay? Nowadays, you know, it's not as necessary. In the old days, you had to, because you couldn't go to Lebanon every month. You couldn't go to Lebanon every summer. You couldn't go to Lebanon every 4 or 5 years for a reunion, which is what we're gonna do with my family. The technology wasn't there. So nowadays, it's good and bad. You have the contact to Lebanon. I mean, you know, hopefully maybe someday I'll retire and, you know, maybe spend half a year in Lebanon, half a year here in the U.S. I mean, you know, that would be the ultimate. But in the old days, you didn't have that choice.
وصرنا هنا لقيت خيبي قال لي يا سيسيليا ليكي رأيي لك أنه بدك تعملي بزنس لولادك تيضلوا بفرد مدينة وإذا ما عملتي بيصيروا كل واحد بولاية نملي قوي الأولاد وصوروا نشكر الله أنه مشي الحول يعني أنا قلت لهم يا أمي نحن منعودين على شغلات لبنانية، منعمل فطير ومنعمل لحم بعجين ومنعمل يعني أشياء بعجين بيستحلوها، عملنا شوكيس يعني برا فوتوا، والله هني تعودوا على هالشغلات وجنوا يأذوا من شابل هيل تيجوا يتغدون.
First thing you do the first day you come visit, when I bought the house here before my wife even saw it, I asked somebody, is there a Middle Eastern bakery or restaurant in this area? So they said, oh yeah, there's one Neoman somewhere and things. So number one requirement is Middle Eastern food.
At the time when a lot of our grandparents were passing, or getting to the age where everybody didn't go visit everybody as much, or we were in college maybe, and we didn't get to spend the time with our grandparents and see the visits, they opened Neomond. So then, you know, the Lebanese community started eating there, and the children, my generation, would start to meet other people in our generation, and that's where the sense of connection.
As of now, we would run into people where he'd say, you know, I still remember when I visit your bakery, your mom will meet me at the door and gives me fresh bread to try.
يلا كل حدا يصل ولأنا حرام كيف بده يشم ريحة هالخبز الحلوة وهذا يلا حبيبي طعام نقي أحلى رغيف وقلوا خذكم.
The tradition. Sampling was a tradition in the family.
وبعدين حدا بده يلا تشيل قلن هودا you know يبقى دامج بريد إنه منو رافخ أو شيء شيل الكيس وقلن يلا صحتين هلا بعدين بيجوا هلا بيسألوا كنتي طعمينا بالفر
يعني we're serving the second generation
yeah
you know
yeah, yeah
the,
هلأ
people walked in at age 5 and 10 they're 40s so their children walking in
hummus baba ganoush tabbouleh. We grew up with these things, and it was amusing to us that all of a sudden people were having restaurants and serving these things, and people were eating them and talking about how wonderful they were. I mean, it was amusing and fun and funny, and yes, and I think that the whole fact that many, many people had begun to embrace the Mediterranean food has played a role in us being a big, big role in us being very proud of our Lebanese culture, no question about that.
In regard of promoting the Lebanese cultures, I consider it as an educational for my home here. I consider it as for the kids that never knew what Lebanese and what Middle Eastern is. If you teach them that stuff, you're doing your community and the home you're living in a favor. I'm doing it not because I want to enforce it on you. No, I'm more American than I am Lebanese at this point. But I want those kids to grow up knowing what it is Lebanese besides seeing it on WRAL or the News and Observer. Lebanon is all about war. Lebanon is all about religions. No, this is not what Lebanon is.
I try to be very involved in the PTA where Amr, my youngest, attends school. And I know lots of parents. And as you can imagine, the Lebanon subject comes up all the time, whether it's the food, the restaurants, friends they know. And they want me to show them how to make the baklava, which I did many times. And so yeah, this interaction with the people and it's very interesting because when they get to know you closer, I think they can see a different face than what they read in the media. And I'm happy to be in this situation.
I think for any human being, we got to know who we are. And that heritage is part of that. You know, so we're proud to be North Carolinians. We love our barbecue. And we're proud to be Americans. We're proud to be Catholics. We're proud to be human beings, part of the human race. And we're proud to be Lebanese. So that's where it fits in.
This country and this state and this area is really a cosmopolitan area in many ways. We are a mishmash of multiple cultures, and that's not very visible. And by highlighting my culture, I love the fact that it hopefully makes others also highlight aspects of their cultures that are unique or that are different. And it really contributes to the sense that this place is a great place because of that.
Over the past 120 years, the Lebanese have created a rich legacy in North Carolina. They have built businesses from humble beginnings and innovative ideas, and grew them into thriving enterprises essential to the state's economy. They brought their faith, along with their dreams and hopes for the future. Their kitchens enthrall our senses with recipes crafted across generations, and their music and dance fill our festivals and neighborhoods with sights and sounds that convey the richness of the Lebanese culture. But their legacy rests as much in the quiet and unassuming. A singular doctor in a small mountain town, or a car mechanic at a Piedmont crossroads, become vital threads in the fabric of the state. Lebanese cedars among the pines of North Carolina.